March 9th, 2020. The Wall Street Journal reports U.S. chip industry fears long-term damage from China trade fights. June of that same year, a piece of MarketWatch reads, a semiconductor cold war is heating up between the U.S. and China. Whether or not the semiconductor industry found itself in a cold war, actions continued to escalate throughout the year. So much so that in the last month of the Trump administration, the former president continued to push China and the industry further. December 2020. CNN reports that the U.S. has banned China's top chipmaker from using American technology. The semiconductor industry continues to dominate headlines, with Time magazine out with a piece just this week that reads, "From cars to toasters, America's semiconductor shortage is wreaking havoc on our lives. Can we fix it?" But that begs the question, is there really a crisis? And how does tax policy relate? Welcome to The Deduction, a Tax Foundation podcast. My name is Jesse Solis, Media Relations Manager at the Tax Foundation. To find out what is going on with the semiconductor shortage and what the role tax policy could play in addressing it, I am joined today by Tax Foundation economist Erica York. Erica, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Jesse. Happy to be here.
All right. So, Erica, we just summed up what happened in the headlines, which, of course, doesn't tell the entire story of what's been going on with semiconductors. But what happened? Does the U.S. not just make semiconductors anymore?
Actually, we make a lot of semiconductors in the United States.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So a bit of context might be helpful here. This is all pulled from the latest annual report from the Semiconductor Industry Association. Today, U.S.-based firms have the largest market share at 47%. Sales by U.S.-headquartered semiconductor firms grew from $102 billion in the year 2000 to more than $200 billion in 2020. That's a compound annual growth rate of more than 3.6%. The United States is actually a top five global exporter of semiconductors. In 2020, the U.S. exported about $49 billion worth of semiconductors, and that was actually our fourth highest exported good, behind only airplanes, refined oil, and crude oil. There are a lot more interesting statistics in the report. I'll highlight just a couple more, but it's really easy to go look up and just look through sort of this treasure trove of data on the industry. Gross capital expenditures from the industry were a little over $30 billion, and R&D expenditures were $44 billion in 2020. That has grown. The combined CapEx and R&D spending from 2000 to 2020 has grown at a compound annual rate of 5.6%. And all of that investment has led to labor productivity in the U.S. semiconductor industry more than doubling since 2001. And there are commercial semiconductor manufacturing facilities in 18 states employing more than 277,000 Americans. So overall, this data shows that while there may have been some slowdown in past years in the industry, overall, the sector is strong, it's expanding, and it's actually a top destination for manufacturing investment.
Okay, so we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry just in the U.S. alone, which is almost, as you said, 47%, half of all semiconductors worldwide. But why are these important? Like, what's this mean for me when I wake up, or, you know, you and your family on your day-to-day lives?
Yeah. So if you just think of like a typical morning routine, your alarm goes off on your iPhone or whatever phone you have. You flip on your LED lights. You walk to the kitchen, turn on the coffee pot, open the fridge, pop some bread in the toaster. Everything you just touched except for the piece of bread has a computer chip in it. If you drive your car to work, new cars can have upwards of 1,000 different computer chips in them. You turn on your computer, your tablet, whatever it is you work on, more computer chips. So really, they are running most of the things that we interact with in our day-to-day lives. And so they have a very important role in our economy, in the way we communicate with each other, and the way we get our work done.
Wow. So next week, we'll discuss the robotic bread. But but for now, even with all that, why is there a shortage going on? Is it the blame on the pandemic? Is it just like a supply chain failure? Is it the industry that's messing up here? Is it governments? Like, where do the problems start arising?
Yeah, so probably some of all of the above. Last year really was a once-in-a-lifetime shock. It disrupted supply chains, and we're still feeling the effect of that. So within semiconductors specifically, at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, we basically shut the economy down for a while there as everyone was social distancing. We weren't sure what this was going to look like. And so some manufacturers, particularly in the auto industry, responded to that by stopping or slowing down production significantly, canceling orders for things, including the chips that would go into cars. So they sort of put a pause on things. At the same time, we were working from home. Kids were doing school from home virtually. That increased demand for electronics. We all needed, you know, more equipment. Maybe we all wanted more gaming consoles to spend time at home since we couldn't go out. And so demand for electronics increased. And that in itself caused a bottleneck in the semiconductor supply chain. So then when demand came back up, automakers found themselves sort of at the back of the line for ordering these chips because they were all going to electronics. And the manufacturing process of semiconductors is a little bit unique. It's not just, you know, like flip the switch and you can start making chips for computers, flip another switch, you can make them for cars. It's a very intricate process. It can take, you know, upwards of 3 months from start to finish of just making a chip. And that's just making the chip itself. It then needs to go get put into whatever it's going into. So it can take a long time to work through these backlogs. So it's a little bit of all of those things. The pandemic changed demand. There were also, you know, companies, the way they responded to it by canceling orders, put themselves at a little bit of a disadvantage. And then you can also think about government policies that are at play here. We have tariffs in place on some of the inputs to these manufacturing processes that create difficulties. There was also, you know, the Suez Canal backup that put a real crimp in global supply chains and just the time it takes to get the things that were already ordered transported where they needed to go. And then within manufacturing processes specifically, a lot of especially automakers use what's called just-in-time manufacturing. So rather than keeping, you know, a big stockpile of all the parts that go into the car, they order them just in time for putting into the car. In normal times, that results in a really lean operation. That's super efficient. But if you can't get that one last chip that you need to put in the car can't go to the lot to be sold. And so that practice also was a disadvantage here. There's some tax policy incentives for that just-in-time manufacturing. The way that you get to deduct your inventories when you're calculating your taxable income makes it more advantageous to use that just-in-time manufacturing. So that is also a policy angle here. But it's a mixture of all those things, plus that once-in-a-lifetime shock that's really led to this issue.
Yeah, the Suez Canal. I feel like if the pandemic had waves, that was like the sixth wave, and who knows what came before or after that even. But you talked a lot about tariffs there, trade, because of course this isn't just a U.S. problem, and it goes beyond just U.S. and China, like the headlines covered a lot during the pandemic. So what are other countries like Taiwan, China, and South Korea doing here to build out the semiconductor manufacturing? Why is there so much international attention going into this?
Yeah, so lawmakers have kind of started referring to semiconductors as the new oil. It's the hot commodity, the commodity of the 21st century. So obviously there are semiconductors, computer chips that go into defense spending and things like that. So there's a national security angle here that sometimes gets played. There's also just the communications tools and the business tools that are so important for our economy to function. And so this is a critical industry. And I think that's why there is so much attention on it. But what we've seen other countries do is heavily subsidize their industries. And the industries have grown in those countries. Sometimes that is misconstrued, this growth in other countries, to say that the U.S. industry is shrinking. That's not necessarily true. All of those statistics that we just went through show how strong the manufacturing sector is in the United States, but the global pie is growing. And I think an important step, or it's important to step back and say, just because other countries might be engaging in industrial planning, that doesn't mean it's the right fit for the United States economy, especially if we look at past instances of the U.S. government trying to pick, you know, a winning industry. And oftentimes they don't make the right bet. That results in, you know, millions or billions of wasted dollars. It hurts competition and it doesn't get us ahead in the long run. Interestingly enough, you know, we point to China a lot here to say, you know, they've got this plan to become the global leader in semiconductor manufacturing. There's been a report by the United States International Trade Commission that found that China is at least 5 years behind where the United States is. And the report concluded that China's industrial planning efforts, this is a quote, will not achieve their desired success. So it's really questionable to try to emulate what China is doing when we find that that is not successful. And we know from the past experience in the United States, too, that trying to provide really narrow benefits or, you know, pick out a decade ahead of time which businesses or which sub-industries are going to be the successful one to make the bet on usually doesn't pan out very well. Our policies that enable, you know, free trade, that enable flexibility and resiliency within the free market tend to work a lot better than these industrial planning efforts.
All right. So there's a lot going on there. A couple weeks ago in taxfoundation.org, you have this great piece laying out one response from Capitol Hill to this shortage. There's a bipartisan bill that's going around. Could you explain what that response is? Is it the only response out there? Usually bipartisan tends to indicate it might at least get some action. Should this bill be considered by lawmakers?
A couple of weeks ago, a bipartisan group of senators introduced the, it's called the FABS Act, or Facilitating American-Built Semiconductors Act. That would create a permanent 25% investment tax credit for investments in both semiconductor manufacturing equipment, as well as the construction of facilities where that equipment would be placed. That would reduce a firm's tax liability, and that would decrease the after-tax cost of making a semiconductor investment. But the bill kind of overlooks a really important aspect of tax policy that should be thought about first before thinking about, you know, subsidizing a specific industry. And even within the bill text itself, there's a line essentially saying like how important construction of facilities and how expensive they are within the semiconductor industry. And yet the bill doesn't address the underlying tax treatment of those investments, which currently would have to be depreciated over decades. And that increases the after-tax cost of making those investments. So just the general structure of the tax code is sort of biased against those. And the bill doesn't address that. Also, it doesn't address some upcoming tax law changes that would require research and development expenditures, which we talked about how many billions of dollars the industry spends on research and development just a little bit ago. That tax treatment is scheduled to worsen after the end of this year. And then the tax treatment of the equipment that would be used in these facilities is also scheduled to worsen starting after 2022. So it's kind of like sprinkling some tax subsidies on top without looking at, you know, what's actually going on in the tax code, the permanent treatment of these investments. There's another bill similar to this one, the Chips for America Act. It was included back in January in the NDAA, but the money for that still needs to be appropriated. We've seen Senate pass legislation that would do that. The House is considering some similar bills right now, but they currently don't include that funding. We're talking about $52 billion, both for the it would be a refundable investment tax credit for qualified manufacturing, but it's a temporary one. And it would also provide just some specific outlays and different programs created for the semiconductor industry itself. So both of these tracks, the Chips for America Act and the FABS Act, are really considering, you know, very narrowly targeted tax subsidies without looking at the bigger picture of the tax code and its treatment toward investment.
That's interesting. Should tax policy play a role in our response to the shortage? Can taxes solve this quote-unquote crisis?
So taxes aren't a panacea here, but I do think they have an important role to play. But I also think it's important to step back and, you know, remember the pandemic and the effects on supply chains were really a sort of a once-in-a-generation shock. So we don't want to make the mistake of, you know, making a permanent policy with the mindset of March or April 2020 economics as our frame of reference when we're in July 2021 now. Things are a lot different than they were back at the start of the pandemic. I really like something Doug Holtz-Eakin wrote a couple weeks ago, and he said a supply chain is what it needs to be. What he meant by that was that businesses know how to organize their transactions to assemble and deliver their products in the most efficient way possible. The government is not in a good position to say, this is what your supply chain needs to look like. So when we're making policies to influence supply chain decisions, we need to make sure we're doing that in a way that's neutral. And I think looking at the underlying structure of the tax code and how it treats these investment expenses more broadly, not just for one industry, but for all industries, is a better way to go to boost manufacturing and to boost investment across industries rather than trying to, you know, pick out favored industries, important as they may be, and provide tax credits that way. Another tax policy angle that's important here is tariffs. So we have tariffs on steel and aluminum. We have tariffs on just a host of things that affect the manufacturing industry as inputs. That's something that would be even easier of a lift to fix because it wouldn't require an act of Congress. That's something that is within the realm of the president to do. So we wouldn't even have to, you know, go through this whole tax policy debate and reconcile what the House wants to do with what the Senate wants to do and then get it to the president. The tariffs could be lifted and provide very, very quick relief relative to something like an investment tax credit.
Is that something Biden has floated yet?
They've said that the tariffs are under review, but they're not making, you know, any big decisions on those yet. So I think it's something they're considering. But again, it's especially that angle with China that can kind of lead to a knee-jerk industrial policy planning response in policymakers just because of that angle of competition of things. When really we know the best policy response would be to lift tariffs and let businesses do what they do best. But that is what it is, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Do you think there's a timetable Congress should work on to try to react to this? Or do you think it's something the free market could work out itself the coming years?
The tough thing with this is even if we, you know, say we do get a permanent investment tax credit or we do get improved expensing, these aren't things that can be constructed overnight. It's at least, you know, 5 years to build one of these facilities. And then it's a months long process to even make a chip. So it's not something that can just be we fix the policy and then voila, all of the investment comes to the United States and we're making, you know, tons more semiconductors. It's not as simple as maybe the policymakers talking about these ideas make it sound. And I do think the supply chain issues we're experiencing now are primarily an artifact of the pandemic and will be worked through with time. It might be painful as we wait for that to work itself out, but I do think it will. And the price signals in the free market are going to help allocate those resources where they need to go. Better than someone, you know, sitting in DC with an idea for a tax credit knows where to put the resources.
So it seems like lawmakers are looking for a short-term answer to a long-term problem. Is this something that is more state-specific and like certain lawmakers have, you know, not special interest in it, but more like, you know, it's going to be jobs in their homes. It's going to be something that's more important to them. That creates an urgency for them. Is this something like where are plants right now, even across the United States?
No, I think that's right. So as I mentioned earlier, there are semiconductor manufacturing facilities in 18 states. And so that means that both of these proposals, the investment tax credit and the CHIPS Act, would have a large impact on the districts of members of Congress where these facilities are located. So, of course, that would be something good in their eyes to do for their constituents. And then, too, you have the industry who would generally always be interested in, you know, a tax credit to help boost their investment. So that's one angle here. And then, like you said, the short term versus the long term, the effects of the pandemic are a short term thing. So it wouldn't be wise to, you know, build out a policy based on this short term shock, especially when we know that the history of industrial policy in the United States has not been so successful. There are more failed attempts than successful attempts. And so I'm not convinced that reshoring semiconductor supply chains, especially when we know we already have robust investment in R&D and CapEx within the industry as it stands now, I'm not convinced that that's going to be a successful endeavor.
Those are all excellent points, Erica. And again, thank you for joining us for this conversation today. We know that semiconductors aren't the only thing you write about at the Tax Foundation, and they're not the only thing you talk about on the deduction. So what else are you working on right now? What else can people expect to see from you soon at taxfoundation.org?
We're working on a couple of interesting pieces of research on some individual income tax stuff. So we're looking at how the stimulus payments that people received over the coronavirus pandemic, how those were spent and what they were spent on. And we're also starting some initial research on the advanced child tax credit payments that are going to start going out on July 15th. To about 39 million households are set to receive those starting this month. So we're going to look at some of the administrative issues and some of the questions that people have about those, including how they might impact tax refunds next year.
That's awesome. Yeah. And if people want to read more of your work or see more of your takes, how can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle is at Erica D. York.
That's excellent. And if you guys are interested, feel free to follow me on Twitter at Solis Jesse. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Deduction. We'd love to hear what you think about this podcast. So please drop us a note at taxfoundation.org/podcast. We'll have more dives into the world of tax policy coming soon. So make sure you subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find everything that the Tax Foundation is up to at more on Twitter at Tax Foundation, as well as on LinkedIn. Thanks again.